Welcome back to the Macko and Cause podcast. This is part two of the third edition of the show. Coming up in this half, we rank our top five soda or pop, depending if you're Canadian or American. We do the big question about the role of money and how it affects you, the sports fan, about how you consume sports. But we started off with me making fun of Gary Bettman with what they said. What they meant.
What they said, what they meant, shall we?
Absolutely.
All right. So here's the idea. You've listened to enough sports, you know, that people get to the mic and they never really tell you what they think. Our job is to drag that and bring it into the light. It's time to play what they said, what they meant.
And for this one, Bob, we are going back to, this was a couple days ago, Gary Bettman talking to the media about Sidney Crosby and concussions.
So he does his pre-finals press conference, and we were just having that conversation about concussions a moment ago. Here is NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman on the topic of concussion protocol.
The second part of your question alluded to the concussion protocol. It is evolving. It is working well. The experts who advise us in terms of what would give us reason to remove players from the game is something that we pay a lot of attention to and constantly evolve, and we're constantly looking to get it right. I know there's always speculation about why this player was or wasn't taken off the ice, but the fact is we look for signs of concussion or possible concussion because from a player's standpoint, they don't like being yanked out of games needlessly. Having said that, when you enforce the concussion protocol, by definition, you're going to take players out of the game who don't have a concussion, but we try and minimize that as well.
So that was Gary Bettman, Bob.
Matty.
Yeah.
He is, he's not a fun speaker, but if you're a lawyer, though, I wonder if other lawyers listen to that and go, him card talk good.
Yeah.
So Matty, that's what Gary Bettman had to say. What did he really mean?
I'm going to do this with my Bettman voice.
Oh, here we go.
First off, Jim Rutherford, shut the bleep up. We're doing a good job. Crosby's fine. Of course, I'm also the guy that is denying a link between concussions and CTE. Even Roger Goodell has changed his tune on that one. Goodell, the same guy who cares about player safety as much as I do about putting another team in Ontario, he looks more forward-thinking about concussions than I do. And we have the best experts out there. We show players who may have a concussion, we show them three fingers. And as long as they are within two, we send them back on the ice. If a player gets hit again, we've instituted an even more rigorous screening. He who wins, best two out of three in paper, rock, scissors. If he doesn't win, he's got to sit. Hey, listen, my hands are tied. These players, they lie about their injuries worse than I lie about how great the game is doing in Arizona or Florida. That's what Gary Bettman meant to say.
Matt, I love it. But you know what I love most about that? Your writing is always funny and clever, and it always makes me laugh. But I love when you give up on an accent halfway through.
I did.
You totally bailed.
I totally bailed on it.
By the end, you were basically...
I know.
You were like a tattered shirt just hanging off of someone's body, that accent.
I wonder who's going to play me in the concussion movie. I wonder what Will Smith...
You're good in short bursts,
right? Yeah, good in short bursts. Yeah.
But that script was a little long for you. I think by the end, you basically gave up on it. What makes me really laugh, Matt, is that you are so much more enthusiastic about doing your Gary Bettman sex line bit than you are this WTM, W2S bit.
Hello there. This is the Gary Bettman phone sex line. Are you taking off your blouse? Your bosoms are heaving, which is causing an erection where the blood is flowing to the head of my penis. That'll be 95 more cents.
Oh, that'll be 95. You see, like that, the joy, that's a great impersonation. Now all of a sudden you've got one.
Yeah, but you're right. It is in short bursts.
Short bursts. Yeah, even short bursts and generally about the blood flow to your vascular situation.
My penis. and I realized actually the script that I wrote was far too long for my ability to maintain that voice.
Everything about that segment seems to be about maintaining. All right, then. So we got our big question coming up, and it was a listener one, actually, a listener suggestion from Robert Gibson, who wrote in and wants to talk about money and sports. We'll get to that in a minute, Matty, but it's that time in the podcast where we get into ranking top five lists.
That's right.
This week, we threw it out to you. Thank you to everybody who follows us on Twitter. The podcast is at Macko and Cause. I'm at Bob Mackowitz, and you are MCause56 on Twitter. We threw it out to you to throw out your suggestions. What would be the top five you would want us to do this week? And it came back from Aaron Bronstetter, Matt. And the topic today is?
It is, if you're an American, top five soda. If you're a Canadian, top five cans of pop that you like to drink.
Now, the way we generally do this is Matt gives his top five, and then I poke holes in it at the end. Or I might totally agree. You never know. I haven't yet, but that day could happen.
Could happen.
But Matt, do you want to just sort of roll through this, and then we'll see where we're at?
Yeah. I got five. I believe you got five as well, so I'll go through it quick. Coming in at number five, and this one the audience was loving, Tahiti Treat. This one was so good. Drake rapped about it in the song Weston Road Flows. And when he wrote, I used to hit the corner store to get to Tahiti Treat. It's fruit punch. It's delicious. But it's not exactly any one single version of fruit punch. It's a mystery. And that's why it's my number five. Coming in at number four, Orange Fanta. As a child, once went to Africa. And it was the only pop they had, and I got addicted to it. At number three, whether it is white or whether it is red or what color it comes in, at number three, cream soda. Just delicious. At number two, making the list for a second time, but this time in grape form, Grape Fanta. And at number one, no need to be a hipster here. Hey, if you learn to buy the world a Coke or you get a jacket or a jersey from Mean Joe Green, at number one, Coca-Cola.
So just quickly, 5 through 1 then, just recap it.
Tahiti Treat at 5, Orange Fanta at 4, Cream Soda at 3, Grape Fanta at 2, Coca-Cola at number 1, apologies to Canada Dry and Wink.
It's a bad list, Matt. It's a bad list. First of all, let's start with Tahiti Treat.
Oh, it's delicious.
No, it's okay. First of all, it doesn't have a taste. It's just sweet.
It's sweet and fizzy.
It does not have a taste.
It tastes like Tahiti Treat.
Right. What flavor is that, Matt? What flavor is Tahiti Treat?
Oh, versus all those other pops that don't have any sugar.
Root beer tastes like root beer. Uh-huh. Coke tastes like Coke. What does Tahiti Treat taste like?
It tastes like their version of fruit punch, and it's delicious.
Their version of
fruit punch. It tastes like fruit punch. Oh, yeah.
There is a kind of a randomness to Tahiti Treat that freaks me out. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when you get a raspberry freezy and it's blue.
Yeah.
And you try to think to yourself, why the hell is this thing blue? And you realize there is no logic to this. Nothing means anything. Tahiti Treat could be brown. It could be pink. It could be green. It doesn't matter. Tahiti Treat, I don't throw out there just because it reminds me of how scary pop is. It doesn't have a real taste, and it doesn't have a real color.
Listen, you.
It's called Tahiti Treat.
Listen, you participation.
What's it got to do with Tahiti?
Why are you so afraid of pop? Oh, I'm scared.
Why?
Of
because
pop.
You throw a penny in it and it dissolves?
Good. That's how I want my pop. When I want to have my juice, on my juice. When I want to have my water, on my water. When I want my pop, I want it to be dangerous. Listen, 2017 with all these snowflakes and participation awards, give me my Tahiti Treat filled with its sugar. It's mystery and it's fruit punchiness.
Tahiti Treat is to pop what Trix or Lucky Charms or Frankenberry or Boo Berry or Count Chocula is to breakfast cereal.
Yes, delicious and a special treat. Not to be had every day, but to enjoy it. All right, that's number five.
Orange Crush, I like that pick.
Orange Fanta.
Orange Fanta?
Yeah, it's got to be Orange Fanta.
Isn't Crush Canadian, though?
I have no idea.
I think Crush is Canadian.
Every
but anyway.
Every multinational company buys everyone else. I don't know what anyone is.
They're both pretty good. What was your number three?
Number three. Doesn't matter the color. Cream soda.
Yeah, cream soda is okay. Once again, it's a little sweet. Maybe I shouldn't say it's necessarily a bad list.
Yeah, you kind of were set to know. I'm kind of the list done.
Yeah, well, just because I was really against Tahiti Treat and I'm really against your number one. I should throw this out too. But
your number two, by the way, Grape Fanta,
which is a nice drink.
Yeah.
So, okay. I should have said it was a bad list, Matt. It's a mixed list. Is that fair to say? No, but let's get into the Coke conversation.
Let's get into the Coke conversation. I'm right here.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
You know what? You got the Yankees, Manchester United.
Yeah.
Coke is the Man U of pop.
Yeah, it is.
First of all, I have a personal reason why I don't like Coke. I was a little bit scarred. Grade 7, Mr. Bavington, who was the teacher for 7-1, and I was in the 7-2 class.
Yeah.
I was in the French extended class.
Zut alors.
Right, and we were...
Ne pas de Coca-Cola.
Yeah, we were the first class. We were the first year at that school for French extended, and Mr. Bavington wasn't a big fan. His class was basically like... I don't know. I don't think it was remedial. I just think he had a tough class, but he would call us the Frenchies. Okay. Like to his class.
Yep. You're the Frenchies.
Yeah. And we would often have gym with them. And the idea was it was like Revenge of the Nerds. Like,
by the way, the least tough bike gang. Oh, no. Here comes the Frenchies.
Zut alors. So, and anyway, my point about Coke was he would drink Coke all day long.
Okay.
And you could actually see his teeth starting to like rot and they would be sharp and pointy. He looked like a Lemony Snicket villain. And he hated us. So in my mind, I always associate Coke with scary grade seven teacher, Mr. Babington.
That's your personal. But a Coke with a lot of ice, you know, is a classic drink. It went with a burger, went with French fries. It goes with popcorn in the movie theater, goes great with rum, but just on its own.
Too many versions of it, Maddie. Too many versions of it.
Normal Coke, not Diet Coke, not Bill Cosby
Coke. Also, they're a fraud. They're a fraud.
Yeah, they're a fraud.
Because they seem like they're the originator, but I believe RC Cola was first, and I'm sure that Dr. Pepper was first. They're phonies.
They're
like Led Zeppelin's first record, where you take Willie Dixon's music and you simply put your name.
Yeah,
and Led Zeppelin had to apologize, and Coke should have to apologize.
They should not have to apologize for making it better. Did they steal it? Yeah. But guess what? That's the fine tradition of music and so many things here in North America. Whether it's the dude who was McDonald's, played by Michael Keaton, the founder. You know what? It takes bravery to take a great idea and make it better. RC Cola, it's fine. But Coca-Cola, how they got there, maybe a little murky, but in terms of just pure pop satisfaction, number one.
All right, so we'll have to agree to disagree. You're going to hate my number one.
All right,
you're
going to
hate
one?
It. So I'll go through quickly just my...
Yeah.
Brio is my number five.
All right.
Brio
Euro trash.
Brio is fantastic.
Euro trash.
Look, this is like your pumpkin pie argument. Brio isn't good in every occasion, but if you got a veal sandwich, you got some veals going, nothing beats a Brio.
I would, Bob, a warm diet Pepsi is good with a veal sandwich.
Yeah, but it enhances it, though. Dr. Pepper, I got a number four. Number three, New Grape. Do you remember New Grape? And New was spelled N-U. This is an old school pop from back in the day.
Okay.
At McCormick's Arena in West Toronto, where I used to play hockey, they had New Grape. So every single time my team would be finished, my dad would buy me a New Grape.
Okay.
Best pop of the day.
All right. That's your Cats in the Cradle pick.
Yeah, all right. Canada Dry. No, actually, I even have another one. But Canada Dry.
Yep.
Is the
solid good drink,
fantastic drink, and Swamp Water number one. Number one is Swamp Water.
What the hell is Swamp Water?
You don't know?
No.
Didn't you have Swamp Water when you were a kid?
No. This is such a hipster list.
No. After baseball, you would go to the concession stand, and they would say, "What do you want to drink?" And
in
you
what
and Swamp
country?
Water. Swamp Water was a little bit of each one of them, so you'd get Seven Up,
you'd get Coke,
Pepsi,
Root Beer.
So each single one of those together mixed up with Swamp Water.
This list is so fraudulent.
Mine.
It's hipster picks breaking the rules. How about we agree on this, Bob? One of the great drinks. It's not on either of our lists because it's very specific. The orange drink from McDonald's. That you would get in the giant Gatorade container, the huge plastic container filled with the orange drink.
It's not a pop, so it doesn't really qualify for this list, but that is a great one.
Yeah.
Okay, so Matt, you and I have a big decision to make here. A big decision.
It's already been made.
Right.
I'm cutting this into two parts.
Okay. Yeah, you're cutting this into two parts?
Yeah, and let me just explain.
We're not just going to bail on the big question and just try to get this thing under an hour?
No. And here's what happened. Our first episode... It was 59 minutes. And what we didn't realize, and I'll keep this quick, was that the podcast host site that we use, you can only go up to an hour. And so the first one, it was not an issue. And then, you know, put up the second one, figuring, okay, everything's good. And then someone realized, it cut out. And I went and looked. I'm like, it cut out right at an hour? So I went back and looked at the fine writing and audio boom and realized it. So no, you are listening right now, hi there, to the second part. We'll figure out where we're going to cut it. We'll cut it somewhere. But... this is the...
can we talk about it like Kill Bill, where there's volume one and volume two
of
the Macklin Cause podcast? So we're in volume two now?
We're in volume two because we're at 54 minutes and we got to do the big question. And the big question is not meant to be... It's that we're not supposed to speed through it like we're on CNN where they have eight panelists and they're discussing, you know, the future of the environment. Everyone's got 32 seconds and everyone spends the first 25 saying that coffee knee or whatever that word that Trump said. And then everyone moves on.
In 30 seconds or less, Matt, Israel, Palestine, two-state solution, workable?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Here's what we do. Big game of Twister. I was going to say a couple drinks, but I know that's not that it's frowned upon certain parts. But game of Twister. They'll get it together.
Maybe they can have a Coca-Cola, Matt, because apparently that fixes everything.
I'd like to buy the world a Coke.
And
the perfect harmony.
Biggest announcement in Matco and Cause history coming up in just a few moments. But right now, the big question. This is a question that came in from Robert Gibson, our buddy. Mm-hmm. He used to be the producer of The Grill Room, where you did many fine segments with Gareth Wheeler, the two of you yelling. And did Gibby also produce your old football fantasy show?
Yeah, the
411. Was it called the 411?
411.
And you had the segment called Dead to Me?
Yeah, Dead to Me.
And that's you would like pop up behind different things around Sun Media, pointing at the camera going, dead to me.
Oh, more than that. I once left a strip club, Jilly's, and I made it seem like I was coming out, and I said I was dead to me because, you know, the regret and remorse from leaving a strip club in the middle of the afternoon.
And the idea was these are people that you had picked for your fantasy team that actually turned out
bad,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, dead to me. All right, so this was the question that came in from Gibby, and it's an interesting one. Is knowing how much athletes get paid good or bad for sports? Now, in 2017, you can't really understand sports without understanding the business of sports.
Yep.
And that's probably always been true, but it seems like that's maybe more true now than it ever has been before. So, Matty, I'll throw it out to you because this can go in a thousand different directions. Do you find that knowing how much athletes get paid is good for bad, good or bad for sports?
Overall, I think it's bad. Now, the one good thing about how much you know how much players make is it goes into the economic soap opera that is off seasons, that is trades, that is trying to get under the cap, that's yelling and screaming at Rodgers because they don't spend enough money and the Detroit Tigers have a higher payroll. That adds narrative and that adds extra layers of our sports coverage. But overall, no. I think I would rather not know. And the reason is, you know, you find there's sometimes a division between the athlete and the fan. Even though we should just have complete love for the athlete because they do great things and they entertain us. And there's a couple divisions. And I think one of them is pay. I think because, you know, people get bitter. And they shouldn't be bitter, but I'm not going to tell people how to feel. But they see, oh, I would, you know what, that guy's holding out for $20 million a year. I'd play that game for $1 million or I'd play for free. And that creates a level of animosity. And it more than anything, it creates a division because we can't relate. And
don't you think that's a sport by sport kind of thing, though? Don't you think that's more true here in Canada, where we tend to look at our hockey players or our CFL players, and we like the idea that Busher Jackson once upon a time was a stock boy at Waldo's down the street in the off season. We love that kind of stuff, right?
We love that narrative, but I think it's universal because it's about economic disparity.
I don't think it's universal. Think about the NBA. Do you think that NBA fans in general feel like they are separated from their stars
every time there's
their heroes because of how much money they make?
Every time there's a lockout, that conversation comes up.
The lockout is a different exceptional case. We should probably park it because it has its own ramifications. But I think that when we talk about max money for NBA players, people don't look at that and say, I can't relate to LeBron or KD
or
Russ Westbrook.
You hear conversations about...
You don't want to relate to them.
No. But when you... Yes, you do. You do
no,
all
you
one
don't.
Money. Yes, you do.
Not so much in the NBA. I think in the NBA, people are treated more like rock stars. Like, people don't want to relate to Mick Jagger.
When fans are angry at a player for whatever reason, dogging an injury, whatever reason you want to do,
right,
we don't have to do lockout. One thing that always comes up is, oh, these players, this guy's overpaid. This guy, oh, he wants to rest. He's getting $25 million and he wants to take a couple games off. I think that it is a universal emotion when there is economic disparity to have little bits of envy will eventually seep into a lot of fans. If we didn't know how much players made, that would go away.
It's funny how we don't seem to have the same conversations about how much teams make at the end of the year or what the bottom line is for
100%.
Your, right?
And it's not fair at all.
It isn't fair. And that's why you and I tend to be pro player, even though in general, I think you are right leaning in business. But when you and I have talked lockout, I hear you talk more pro player than I do hear pro team. Because let's face it, the player... They are paid what the market will bear.
Yes.
But the idea that they should ask for as much as they could get, that somehow makes them bad people, I've never understood that. Everybody should ask for as much as they can get.
How much do you think Baltimore Ravens fans, how much do you think, what was the disparity they had for love for Joe Flacco from the moment they won the Super Bowl against the 49ers till after he signed the contract that he deserved, and then that led to them having to lose a lot of good talent? And they'd be like, oh, if he had taken a pay cut, we could have kept this wide receiver or this lineman. But greedy Flacco wants $25 million. And then that narrative gets going.
See, this is why I would flip it and say, I think it's great that people know how much athletes are paid. And it's not just because of any kind of economic fairness, but it's exactly what you just said with Joe Flacco. It may not be as fun or as innocent to know, but what it is it's more interesting. That the more you understand the business of sport and how things actually work, there are so many more layers now to peel back on how a sports team actually works, how it's run, how a league works. And the new fan is so interesting to me. You know, when we were kids, we wanted to be players. I dreamed of being Lanny McDonald. I had the number 7 going, And I never really cared much about who the GM was. And I certainly didn't care. I mean, in Toronto was a little bit different because it was Harold Ballard. And he was a bit of a, you know, it wasn't like the pension plan. Harold Ballard was a thing. He was a villain. But my point is, like, I didn't really care about how the team was run. I just related to the players and whether they were going to win or not. And I don't really see that in kids today, particularly teenagers. I think fantasy sports, I think things like, you know, Cap Geek back in the day or General Fanager, we have access to so much information. And I think Cap, and here's where we can bring this conversation back in, but sports is so much more interesting now because there's so many more things to consider when it comes to being a fan than before.
Now, I agree with you on the interesting. I talked about it earlier. One of the biggest reasons why Golden State is as good as they are is because of the ankle injury to Steph Curry, which he early in his career was always getting hurt. So when they re-signed him, they signed him to a very small amount of money. There's like 4 or 5 players on Golden State that makes more than Steph Curry. And eventually that'll change, and that might change how much they win. Same thing with the Seahawks. When they went through their 3-year run of super dominance, they're still very good. But the number one key was Russell Wilson was on a rookie contract. Now that is all
exactly.
And it's all very interesting.
And in the NHL, you can't win unless you have good ELCs, right? If you don't have good young players who are getting paid, you know, apart from their bonuses, very little, you can't make the cap work, and you're not going
to
win.
Here's my question to you. Is we consume sports in a different way because we worked in the business for so long. But how many for the average fan, where sports is one part of their pie and it's their entertainment part of the pie, like if you're doing Trivial Pursuit, is it interesting to them about salary cap and cap implications? And if you sign this guy, what it's going to mean here or here? Because for a lot of people, and this is a great way of looking at it, sports is just about that 2.5-3 hour entertain me, give me some highs, give me some lows. And I don't need the other stuff.
So I remember when we used to do the radio show, James Myrtle, who's now the editor-in-chief over at The Athletic, but he used to be at the Globe and Mail. And he's a real smart guy, and he was on the show. We used to call him the professor, remember?
Yep.
Because he was so into numbers. We used to play Kraftwerk bed music.
Yeah.
I am the operator of my pocket calculator. And I remember asking him once, what makes for a better fan? Who is a better fan? The one who doesn't want to know the truth and just wants to cheer? Or the one who wants to know all they can so that they can understand what's really happening? Who is the better fan?
Well, for James, he's going to be biased. He's going to want door number 2.
Because and he did take that.
Of course, but it also suits his needs, his outlook on life, but also just his paycheck.
Well, and I think that's fair, and I think that's true. But I would also say it's almost generational in a way, because when I talk to people who are 30 and under, they generally just don't want a team to cheer for blindly. They kind of want to understand more. And I feel like there is a paradigm shift, whereas you describe sports in a very spectator kind of way.
Yeah.
That you sit back and you passively consume it with a beer and a bag of chips and you have fun and you turn off the... But, you know, if you've grown up with the internet and you've grown up and you've only known access to information and you've only known pursuing your interests to the fullest and not waiting for it to come on TV as a break in your day, but where you can access it and it just becomes part of your day every day, that... This new kind of fan, I call it the rise of the amateur expert. So interesting to see what's coming out of that. And part of that is the disclosure of salaries. It is understanding how your sports work. And I'm more interested right now at this stage in my life in those fans than the ones who just want to say, I remember talking to a buddy of mine and he loves the Leafs. God, he loves the Leafs. He was wearing a Leafs cap when I put it on. I remember saying, boy, I hope that Noah Hanifin doesn't wind up being a lot better than Mitch Marner. He goes, yeah, that could be true. You think we could get him?
That's great.
No,
yes.
It's not great.
Don't be.
It is. I'm not going to judge his happiness, but no.
Yes, but you are judging his happiness, and you're being dismissive of every fan consumes the game in a different way. You don't have to,
But aren't there better ways? Like, I don't buy this sort of moral relativism. Everybody's allowed to do whatever they want. Aren't there better ways to consume a game? Isn't there something more interesting about wanting to understand how something actually works as opposed to just being handed like handed something complete and being satisfied with that.
Consuming sports is about being entertained. And there's a variety of different ways of being entertained. There's a variety of different ways of getting to point B. And if that's just for someone who wants to make sure that Marner's better than Hanifin, and hey, maybe we can get Hanifin as well, and they're just enjoying, you know, the bells and whistles of it, you know what, then go on you. That good on you. I'm not going to do that, but I'm fine with it.
And what do you prefer, Matt?
What do I prefer?
You love the NFL. You love the Giants.
Yep.
And you have studied that team, not only historically, but you break it down in terms of their scouting reports and who they're bringing in. And would you... How do you feel when you sit with someone who says, I like the NFL, and says, Eli Manning, he's not that good?
I get angry at him.
Why do you get angry at him?
Because he beat Tom Brady twice in a Super Bowl.
And also because that person doesn't know what the hell they're talking about.
They don't know what they're talking about.
Right. So don't play the I'm never snobby about it. You're just not snobby about things you don't care about. But when you do care about them, you want people to know more about it.
I want people to know more about it. But at the same time, when the game's actually going on, I don't usually think, and I think you're the same, I think most people are, they don't really think about how much someone makes. I just think
that you always think about how much someone makes. You always do. In fact, I would guarantee you this. The average under 30 Leafs fan in Toronto right now knows, you know, pretty closely how much everyone's worth to his team every single time they step on the ice.
And I think that can be a little depressing. When Austin Matthews scored in overtime in the outdoor game, you know, in Detroit, I don't think people were thinking, oh, okay, well, that's great because we've got him under control for the next 3 or 4 years, which allows us financial flexibility. You know, at that time, all that was going on through your head was, whee! It's like, oh, thank God we won because the Leafs blew yet another 2-3 goal period lead, but yay, we won the game.
It speaks to the paradigm shift in sports, which is we used to talk about talent, and now we talk about value. Mm-hmm. But in a cap world, you can't not talk about value. That's the only thing that matters.
But talent is more fun than value.
Talent is more fun than value, and yes. I'm not even going to disagree with you. Like I said, in the innocent, childlike way of appreciating things, I'd rather not know how much anybody makes, and I'd rather believe that everybody's good. But in this world... I'm glad that I know because it empowers me to become a better fan.
You know what's interesting, Bob?
What?
Earlier you were doing your top five.
My
top,
swamp water?
Yeah, swamp water.
Swamp water pick.
And one of your other picks, Vue or what was that?
New grape,
yeah. Both of those you picked because of a simpler time. Time as a child. A time when it was just about emotion and just happiness. So when it comes to your top five grapes... then it's all about just emotion and nostalgia. But when it comes to the big question, then it's all analytics and value and no compete contracts.
Matt,
mm-hmm.
Do you want to lose this argument now? Just let me know if you want to lose it now or should we just putter around a bit and then I'll drop the hammer later. What do you want?
No, go now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You like wine?
I do.
What do you like about it?
Like the way it tastes.
Mm-hmm.
It can take a simple moment and elevate it. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that every wine is so different. Same grape from a different region. Mm-hmm. Hell, same grape from the same region from a different vintage, and it will taste completely different. There's a mystery, a romance to it.
Okay. So, and I think a lot of people know wine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But not a lot of people have actually gone through the years of study that you have to become a sommelier, right?
That's true.
You are actually a trained and licensed expert on the topic of wine, right?
To an extent, yes.
I don't know much about wine.
Yeah.
Who likes wine more? Me when I say, this is a good tasting glass of wine. I like that. Or you when you say, this is a good tasting glass of wine. I like that.
We're both even.
Who is the better wine fan in that moment?
We're both even.
Do you really believe that, Matthew?
I have said, and I know this seems like I'm doing a dodge.
I called you Matthew to scold you. Do you really believe that, Matthew?
Okay. This is not a dodge because...
It's an outright lie.
No, it
so
is.
You're saying you're not hiding. You're just simply lying now.
Your levels are peaking. I understand your point, and I understand your point why for the big question, why you want to know. But getting to the wine thing, whenever I do an event, a big event at the National Club or for a stagette, the number one, and by the way, if you want to hire me, mcause56, my Twitter account, the number one thing, are you enjoying it? I've had $500 bottles of wine that I've hated, and I've had an $11 Chianti that I absolutely loved. If we are both enjoying it, then the wine has succeeded and we have succeeded because we have found something to consume that we are enjoying. And I know it seems like I'm dodging or lying to win this argument, but I legitimately believe that.
I don't even think winning is an option at this point, but you might evade enough to get a tie.
Are you going to stare at me like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm when he thinks someone is lying?
I'm giving you the eyeball polygraph right now. All right, simple question.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it at this. Who is the better lover of wine? You? Or the person who says, who doesn't know jack all about wine.
Me.
Who loves more? I love this wine.
I do.
Who loves it more?
I am the better appreciator of the wine because I can see it from the big picture and I can see it from just the pure enjoyment.
And I would suggest that I'm not disqualifying the sports fan who doesn't want to know anything about the sport they watch or doesn't ultimately care. Like, I get that. I think that is legit. And it goes back to your point about, I just want something that tastes good. I don't need tuna that tastes great. Tuna with great taste, I need tuna... Not going to blow that. Anyway, my point is simply this. Because we now know salaries, because we now know how the business of sport works, because we now understand value versus talent, because we understand how roster composition matters and contract structure works, that the person who's really willing to dive into that is a kind of an enthusiast that I think has a special place. And I think there's only going to be more of it in the future. And I like that. And I'm excited by that. And I think there's something to that that has offered a new level of fandom that just not knowing anything and just, popcorn and numbers on the jersey, that was great, but this is now, and this is probably better.
I don't know if I'll say it's better. I understand what you're saying. I guess my retort to that, and there's no real tangible answer, but the more you, because there's only 24 hours in a day. There's only so much you can consume in any day. The more you dive into there, does it rob some of your just pure emotion? Like, does it rob some of your, just so happy and delirious? And the thing is, there's a great sensation of, like, when you always see a magician, I don't want to know how the trick works. I just want to enjoy it. And there's sometimes...
But you're lying now. But, like, you are studying for the 2018 NFL draft now. You don't feel this way about the stuff you really care about. The stuff, in fact, you're obsessive about the stuff you
sometimes
care about.
Sometimes when I'm watching sports, I don't want to know how it happened. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening, even if some...
Because you told me once that you would watch back old tape of Jonathan Ogden on a stunt and how he blocked two guys to allow the running back to pop to the outside.
Do you know why? Because it was super amount of fun to watch this offensive lineman go from his left tackle position, go to the right side, and pancake two guys. It was this visceral, beautiful thing. I'm like, look at that. That's fun.
And you know why you got to enjoy that the way you did? Because you learned about the sport you were watching.
Yeah, I didn't know how much money he was making on the side.
Well, that's a fair point.
X's and O's is different than salary cap implications.
That's probably the closest you've got to getting back into this argument since we started.
How many C's are there in condescending? I always forget. I'm such a bad speller.
Wait, you ready for this? Two.
Yeah, that's great. What's your big announcement there, Bob?
Assuming I don't have strep throat, and we're just going to have to find out from my exciting experience with the swab later today. Yeah. The Macko and Cos podcast is expanding.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Tomorrow. Yes.
Maddie and I, you may know this, but Maddie and I love movies. And we especially like, not just film, but movies.
Yes.
Big summer honking movies.
That's right.
And so we decided when the good ones are released that we were going to do emergency movie review podcasts.
That's right.
Tomorrow.
We're gonna go see Wonder Woman tomorrow.
Wonder Woman tomorrow. Yeah. And the idea is if it all comes together, as soon as we're done, I think we'll probably see like the 4 o'clock show or something.
Sure.
Maybe the 7. I don't know. We'll figure that out.
Yeah.
But then come right back here afterwards to Stately Cause Manor.
Yep.
And record a quick emergency review podcast.
That's right. That'll only be a one parter. I mean, this is a two parter.
This, you know what? Next time we're getting a timer, eh?
We got a timer. It's right here. You can see it. We're at an hour.
Is this because you're in charge of the timer?
It's right here. It's an hour and 14 minutes and 12 seconds as I'm talking.
We actually sat at the end of the last podcast and said, well, let's make sure we don't go over an hour next time.
It's never going to happen.
It might happen. Volume 1, Volume 2, though. Macko and Cos.
That's right. This is the end of Volume 2. Bob, any final thoughts? Did you enjoy your tea?
I didn't. It's actually not a very tasty tea at all. No, thank you for asking, but no.
Goodbye, Bob.
Goodbye. Oh, wait, Matthew, before you say goodbye, this was your whole bit. You wanted to do the, what are we going to talk about next time we're together?
Oh, that's right. That's right. We try to give you what the number one topic will be next week. It's kind of a spoiler alert. No point in watching sports for the rest of the week. You know what we're going to be talking about next week? The Stanley Cup will have been ended in a whimper. Golden State will be firmly in control. And the Blue Jays will be over 500.
Really? Bold prediction.
That's right.
I could see that. But I also think the Jays are a team of streaks, and they could just as easily be 4 or 5 games under.
But all they're doing is getting healthier and healthier. So, you know what? This, as you said last week, this team is interesting. Point to Mackiewicz. They're interesting.
Yeah, it is true. I have never known what to expect week to week. I think what we're going to talk about next week is Golden State as the great team that we always should have acknowledged them as. That when they lost last year to the Cavs, it was a bit of an anomaly, and probably because Steph Curry was hurt. But I believe they're going to be spanking the Cavs outrageously. And we'll probably be talking about just how great they are and asking, where does this team sit in the history of great NBA teams?
And by the way, you know who we'll be talking about again then?
Hmm.
Michael Jordan. Because then he'll be comparing it to, like, you know, the Jordan Bulls. Once again, everything when it comes to the NBA comes back to Michael Jordan.
And who's kidding who? We're going to talk about the Young Leafs next week.
Go Marner. Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.